Your favorite things feel made for you. Your education should too. University of Maryland Global Campus, formerly University of Maryland University College, was made to serve the military and working adults like you. Today, we continue that tradition by offering frequent start dates so you can get started with convenient online learning that fits your schedule, by recognizing your accomplishments with credits you can earn for what you know, by providing no-cost online resources replacing most textbooks because a college education can fit your budget too, and with no SAT or GRE required for most programs. University of Maryland Global Campus, made for you. Last year, we awarded more than $15 million in scholarships to qualified students, including community college students, service members, veterans, and working adults just like you. Discover how we can make your education and your goals for the future a reality. Visit us at umgc.edu. That's umgc.edu. Certified to operate in Virginia by Chev.
Welcome, everybody, to another Double Toasted interview. I'm Corey Coleman, and again, here in the middle of the day. And if we are here in the middle of the day, it means that we have somebody very special and someone amazing on. And that's been the case for the last about five interviews that I've done. I've been very, very honored to speak to a lot of people who I've looked up to and never thought I would have a chance to meet. And as you can see, never say never, because today I am joined by somebody who I looked up to before he was the character that you know him as, and I am talking to Mr. Tom Kenny. Tom, how are you doing, man?
Hey, good, Corey. Prepare to be underwhelmed. Doing great, man. Doing great. Hey, what's the difference between the day interviews and the night interviews? Like, I watched some of your podcasts, and it was always like you always go, hey, I'm talking to you in the middle of the day now.
Yeah, well, in the middle of the day, I'm usually a lot more cultured, try to sound at least a little bit smarter. Nighttime is probably a little more profanity and stupidity.
Yeah, no. Well, I love profanity and stupidity. I'm all about those things. And I tend to lose IQ points as the day goes on, too. So we'll see.
Oh, we're a perfect match then. This will be a great interview.
See how many cups of coffee we need to get up to speed.
Well, I can't do coffee, but I can do almond milk. So that's what I'm doing right now.
All right. Okay. This is actually an oat milk cappuccino. So we got our alternative milks happening.
Nice, man. You know what? This is already getting started with a lot of energy, and which is great, man, because, you know, I try to come in here and act professional. I try to come in here and keep my composure, but there are some people who, like I said, I have seen for years and have admired and been entertained by and looked up to for years. And I'm not lying when I tell you that you're one of those guys, man. So this is very special for me. Now, before we get into the conversation, we do have to talk about some things that you're doing right now. One of the reasons that you're here is so that we can talk about, and I'm going to show a graphic right there of this, the SpongeBob musical live on stage, which is available on DVD right now. I know you got some talking points about this. You want to tell us more?
Yeah. Boy, yeah, you're overestimating my professionalism, but like he actually comes with talking points. Yeah. The SpongeBob musical. It's a DVD of the Broadway show, the successful Broadway mm-hmm. show, Tony nominated. And a lot of people didn't get a chance to see the Broadway musical on Broadway while it was there. And then it was just starting to tour, and then the pandemic happened. So it's cool. This is a performance that we shot, and this is it live on stage as it happened. And unlike the Broadway musical on Broadway, I'm actually in this one playing Patchy. On Broadway, there was a different actor playing Patchy, the pirate, the live-action pirate, you know, on the SpongeBob cartoon yeah. series that I portray. And for this one, they said, hey, you know, you want to mess around with the Broadway cast and put on the patch and the pirate outfit and be Patchy. And I was like, yeah, cool. And wow, what an adventure, man. I got to fly around and, like, you know, get lowered on a harness, you know, because Patchy breaks through the roof of the theater while the show's going on and rappels down on a rope, you know. So it was, yeah, I was doing all my own stunts, which is you know, when you're a man of my years is not always the wisest thing.
It sounded like you had a great time on that, man.
And I had a ball, man. And the cast is so great. Like, everybody in the cast, like Ethan Slater, the Broadway SpongeBob, the first original Broadway SpongeBob, and Danny Skinner, that the original Broadway Patrick. We just all got along so great with each other. All the actors, they were just great people and welcomed me into their world the way that we try to when there's a newbie that comes into voiceover world, you know, where somebody from a different plane, like on camera work that hasn't done much voiceover or whatever, comes in. You know, you want to make them feel comfortable and nice and not be snobby and cult cliquish, you know. And these people were so nice to me, and it was just a ball. Patchy gets to sing a song, and it was just terrific, man.
You know,
it's a great production. I was when I first saw it on Broadway. Actually, I saw it in previews before it went to Broadway in Chicago. I was just blown away by how it made everything work. You know, our expectations. We went in with very few expectations. The cast did, like. Mm-hmm. Why does there need to be a live action SpongeBob? You know what I mean? Like, what's the reason for that? Yeah, you know what I mean? There's basically what we're saying is there's way more ways for that to go wrong than to go right. And it just, Tina Landau and her team just blew everybody's expectations out of the water. I loved it. I went back and saw it a couple more times in New York.
Yeah, you know what? I think a lot of people had that reaction. Like, why is there a live action SpongeBob? And I think more people were surprised to learn and pleasantly learn that, you know, it's a success story on Broadway. It's won awards and everything.
It was. Yeah. And you know, the internet culture is just like, you know, well, brought SpongeBob on Broadway. Thanks for raping my childhood. You know, people got a lot of time on their hands, but now more than ever. But yeah, I think people were just pleasantly surprised. It was the coolest thing for me when I first saw it, because I'm always looking at the kids in the audience because they're the best, the most reliable test marketers, you know what I mean? So I was going, are they, when the lights go down and these human beings walk out and they're not wearing like theme park costumes, you know, like walk around all encompassing costumes, they're kind of dressed in clothing that suggests they're characters, but they're not suits, you know. If the kids accept these people as the cartoon characters that they watch on their television screen, we're home free. And I saw that happen within minutes. You know, Ethan walks out, people go, whoa! You know, Patrick walks out and Squidward walks out, and they're all like, wow! You know, and that's when I just breathed a heavy sigh of relief and knew that that this thing was gonna, you know, at least had a going chance. And then by the end of the show, never having seen any of it before, this is the preview in Chicago, like we were just literally in tears, you know, like it was like, wow, it was so great and such a great tribute to Steve and everything, who oversaw it personally, you know, when it was in development and everything. So yeah, I give really long answers, don't I?
No, man, this is your interview. This is your time. And I'm listening to every word that you say. Now, this is great. You make my job a lot easier when I can just sit back and enjoy your words, man, and what you're saying.
I can just interview myself.
Yeah, you know what?
Tom Kenny, welcome to Triple Toasted. Yeah.
And I will just sit up here and record it and be happy with that, man. You know, if I may, because everybody knows SpongeBob and everything about SpongeBob. And like I said, I'm old enough to remember things that you have done way before your voice work, the voice work you're predominantly doing right now. I grew up with live action Tom Kenny. I remember.
What?
Yeah, I'm gonna play a clip. Like I said,
you ain't that old.
Yes, I am that old, man. I remember back in the 80s, man, early 80s, and I'm gonna play a clip real quick right here of you from Friday Night Videos when you were hosting that, when video shows used to be a thing for kids on the weekends.
Music news. The Milli Vanilli scandal continues to clog up the court system. In response to lawsuits from betrayed Milli Vanilli fans. Yeah, I know. I've never actually met one either.
Smart ass even back then.
That was a weird job, Friday Night Videos, because it was basically that show existed for people that didn't have MTV. You know, if you didn't have MTV and you couldn't see music videos, like you didn't have cable is what I'm saying. So then, oh, here's NBC, you know, and late at night on I guess, Saturday nights, they'd show Friday night videos, I think after SNL. Yeah. And we actually shot my segments in the same studio as SNL. And it was weird because it was only the top videos. Like there was nothing obscure or indie or weird about it. And I was not a top 40 listener. Like I don't even pay attention to that. I never did. That's why I wind up doing what I'm doing. You know, but all the comedy and all the bits had to be about like top 40 or even like top 20 music that's going on right now. The most mainstream of the mainstream. And so that was kind of a challenge, was making jokes about stuff that you really don't care about. You know, I really don't give a crap about any of this stuff that's at the top of the charts. It's never crap. That's never stuff that I was interested in my life. I'm like an old punk rocker, you know? And, but it was really fun. And I remember the funnest part of that, was I got to do an interview with Little Richard. I got to interview Little Richard, who was just, you know, one of my idols, a total space alien, you know, and he was just fantastic. Like everything you is wild and crazy. Like you say, I've got energy. He was like me times 10, you know, and he was not he was not 20 years old at that time. And he just had giant energy. But yeah, Friday Night Videos was a weird gig. I'd fly to New York. They fly me from California to New York City, and we do like we shoot, I don't know, 3 weeks worth of wraparounds and stuff like that, and then I'd go back to LA. It was a very fun show. A friend of mine named Pearl Lieberman was she very hip, very, very cool person, and she was a producer on that show, and she suggested me to them, and they wound up saying yes. I was just, you know, I started out as a stand-up, so she, you know, these people would see my stand-up around, and stand-up was so big on TV back then, all these brick wall, you know, these shows with brick walls and a microphone and some guy in a sweater going, what's up with airline food? So, you know, I did all of those, and I did Letterman and I did Conan as a stand-up, like before I ever did a voiceover. So that's what people, that's a funny thing, is that most people don't even realize that I had this whole career before SpongeBob, and I don't really care enough to explain, you know. So when people do stumble on that stuff, they're kind of like, wait, what? Mind blown, you know. So it's kind of fun.
That's the thing. I've followed your career way before the voiceover stuff came up. You know, you talk about comedy, and I was really surprised to learn, because I knew that you knew Bobcat Goldthwait. I knew you two were friends. I didn't know you grew up with each other. I know you were friends since you were 7 years old.
Yeah, 6 years old, actually. First grade we met. And still buddies. I talked to him all the time. And it was just one of those weird friendships that's lasted half a century. And he and I, we grew up in East Syracuse, New York. Not a hotbed of show business, you know, kind of a blue-collar town. And, you know, him and I were just always interested in comedy and rock and roll, and just, you know, he was my buddy, you know what I mean? We loved George Carlin and Andy Kaufman and the Cramps and the Sex Pistols and the Kinks and the Who and, you know, all this stuff, Marx Brothers, you know? So, you know, it's nice to have that one kid in your life that knows the secret handshake, you know, because this was before the internet, obviously, way before. So you couldn't just go on and suddenly be talking to a zillion like-minded people, you know. You're just looking for that one kid in your town who cares about whatever, like Wilson Pickett records or whatever, you know what I mean? And you know, so Bobcat's my oldest and dearest buddy, and so in some ways he's one of the people that's responsible for me even doing a job that I love, you know, because I was always a little bit more of the shy kind of non-confident type of the two, and he was always the guy going, you know, you're funny, you know, move, you got to get out of Syracuse, move to Boston, you know, I'm, you know, and then, you know, you got to, you know, he's kind of pushing me every step of the way. I was writing jokes for him, and he was a young stand-up, and he was going, do it, you're funny, do it yourself. And I'm like, no, you know. And so yeah, he he's really hugely responsible for me doing this job that I love, you know, and that's such a gigantic quality of life issue is doing some, you know, if you're lucky enough to earn a living doing something that you don't actively hate, that puts you way above most people. you're kind of the top of the contentment pyramid there, you know?
No, that is great to hear, man, that you can have a lifelong relationship like that. I would like, not this, you know, brings up something because, you know, again, talking about how your career has come up. I mean, you're all out there with your face and your voice. I'm going to show a clip right here just real quick. And I have a question about it. And
you're killing me, Corey.
And people will know. Am I killing you in a way that, like, I'm showing too much? Am I bringing up too much?
No, I'm just like, I don't know what you're going to pull out of your trick bag. So I'm just like, what embarrassing video is it? Once I started doing voiceovers, I realized that I much preferred to be heard and not seen. So this is like shock therapy.
Well, maybe I shouldn't bring up a clown doing drugs then.
Dude, you bring up, oh, okay, I know what this is. Okay, no. This is double toasted, hey, man. Anything goes.
Your clowns are on dope.
Where you going, old man? You didn't see nothing, all right? You saw five happy, jolly clowns sitting around eating a big plate of beef. White, powdery, beef.
Very much different from SpongeBob right there.
Yeah, that was 1992, so SpongeBob was not even a glimmer in Steven Hillenburg's eye. But yeah, that was a movie called Shakes the Clown, which has got like an interesting cult following. Mm-hmm. Bobcat wrote it and directed it. Just, you know, there's no money for anybody, no budget, so he pretty much just put all his friends in it, including a very young pre-SNL Adam Sandler. And it was really fun. Most of that dialogue there is, if not all of it, is improvised. Like, I would open the script and go, here's what we're shooting today. And it would be Tom improvises about doing cocaine, and I'm like, oh, okay. I've never done cocaine, but I've been around. I've been a comedian, so it's not like I haven't been around it a little bit. Okay, it was really funny. What a cast! And it's funny. It's gone on to achieve this weird cult following over the years. The man in that clip is Paul Dooley, who was Wimpy in the Popeye Robin Williams movie. Mm. And Robin Williams actually is in this movie too. Robin does a cameo because he was buddies with Bobcat.
Yeah.
And, Robin obviously was a giant movie star. And the fact that he did this down and dirty, three M&Ms in a bowl constitutes craft service table movie was just tells you how cool and artistic Robin was.
Yeah, that was your second movie ever, right? Shakes the Clown?
Mine, yeah. I did everything. Like I said, you know, my whole career has kind of been about, like, never say no to anything. Like, it's a lot easier. Like I tell my kids, like, no, you know, in terms of people saying, hey, do you want to try to do this thing? It's a little bit outside your comfort zone. Do you want to do it? Like, it's easy to say no to that stuff. No thanks, you know, but no great adventure. Like I tell my kids, no great adventure ever started with the word no. Yeah. You know what I mean? Hey, Marco Polo, you want to sail to Asia? Nah, you know, no thanks. You know, so you kind of, my whole career has been about just saying yes to things. And like I said, I was always a little bit, not shy, but, you know, I wasn't totally 100% look at me guy. And so that was a little difficult but I wanted to do stand up and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. once I started doing that, and then that kind of led to on camera work and I guest starred on, you know, did guest spots on a lot of sitcoms and stuff like that. Just Shoot Me and Drew Carey Show and stuff like that. And like I said, I did those stand up appearances And in the meantime, all during that, I was trying to bust into voiceover. Like, that's what I really wanted to do. Like, even when Bobcat and I were kids, I was a cartoon freak. And I would say, he would say, whose career do you want? If you could have anybody's career in show business, you know, we're kids, you know, we're like fifth grade. And I said, Mel Blanc, man, Mel Blanc is the guy, you know, Mel Blanc. He's been doing it for 100 years. Nobody knows what he looks like. He, you know, he can be Bugs Bunny, you know. He can be on oxygen and still doing Bugs Bunny. You know, that's perfect. It's all the good stuff about being famous with none of the bad stuff, you know? And so I can't believe that I was kind of right about that. But most stuff that you think when you're a little kid, you turn out to be wrong about. But I was actually right, you know? And so when I finally did manage to kind of worm my way into voiceover, which was really hard, like, I was writing on TV shows and doing stand up and you know, making good bread as a stand up and I just couldn't crack that voiceover nut, and it was by far the hardest tent to get my big nose under. And once I did, I just was like, I don't need to speed date other jobs, you know. This is what I want, you know. If I could just do this, a ton of this, I don't care about being in People magazine cooking breakfast, you know, or whatever. I don't care, you know. And so you know, once Rocco's Modern Life happened, which was a late 90s Nickelodeon tune that you know was my first animated series, then that was when I just felt like, wow, you know, this is the career I want. This is the lane I want to mostly be in.
You know, that's I was surprised to hear that you wanted to do voice work so early. That was actually going to be a question of mine, because you have you've done a lot of sketch comedy, a lot of progressive and just really just almost absurdist and surreal sketch comedy. Like, I remember Mr. Show. When Whoa. You were on there. Yeah, I used to love Mr. Show. And I even remember on Fox, there was The Edge. I'm sorry to keep bombarding you with this, but I got to show people, because it was very crazy. And it had your wife on there, too.
Is this The Edge?
This is The Edge right here, where you came in with the troll date.
It's our baby's first date ever, and I want to record the moment.
Hi, Mom, Dad. I'd like you to meet Grandella.
Yeah,
that was pre-Shrek.
Yes, it was.
That was
before Shrek, by the way. Yeah, man. You know, I was going to ask you.
And before trolling, before the word trolling was a verb.
It was, yeah. But when troll was actually a troll, you know, a creature. You seem to really love doing surreal sketch comedy and progressive sketch comedy. And I know you're doing more voice work today. Is sketch comedy something that you might want to do more of at some point? Or do you do that in California? Do that live anywhere right now?
Well, you know, nobody's doing anything live right now, you know, this kind of, it all goes hand in hand. Like, it was kind of like this ongoing process of just kind of discovery and kind of like sampler plate, you know, poo-poo platter of like what you like doing and what you don't like doing, and the stuff that you kind of like doing, and what aspects of the things you like doing can you take into some other arena. So I always loved sketch comedy. You know, The Edge was great. And like you said, my wife was on that show. She wasn't my wife then. That was the show we met on. And it's funny, the day that we met, the first day we met was on set, and they said, oh, you guys are going to be playing like the parents of this baby. Like, you know, your parents that are super overprotective of your newborn baby, and you childproof your house, like in a insane way, like overly childproof. And so, okay. So the first day that she and I met, we played parents of a baby, you know what I mean? And then it kind of wound up happening for real. It's kind of life imitating art. But, and she was also on Mr. Show, obviously, my wife, Jill Talley.
Jill Talley, yeah.
Karen Plankton's computer wife on SpongeBob. So everything is everything is connected. But I realized, wow, why do I like sketch comedy so much? Well, I don't like looking like me. Like, I like being in like heavy makeup. If you put a wig on me and like some prosthetics and stuff like that, or let me walk with a limp, or put like a weird mustache or beard on me, I love that so much more than this, you know, because I always loved character actors, you know, like those are my idols. I never cared about movie stars, but like character actors, those were the cats that I would go, wow, you know, look at that guy. Wow, he's this and he's this and he's this, all the same guy. Wow. And voiceover was kind of like that, you know, it's basically character acting, sketch comedy, character acting, playing people who don't have to look like you. Like I always say, if I was doing on camera predominantly now, you know, maybe I'd be playing, you know, dopey dads. You know what I mean? You're not going, you call that a bathing suit? You're not leaving this house, you know? And probably the way the TV goes, I'd be playing that guy's dad. I'd be playing the dad's dad, you know, hey, grandpa, where's grandpa? Toilet flush sound effect. You know, I'd be that. So once I started doing, voiceovers, I was like, wow, this takes everything I like from sketch comedy and it eliminates some of the stuff that I didn't like about sketch comedy. About I wouldn't say sketch comedy. It eliminates some of the stuff I didn't like about being on camera, or, you know, and the same with, I liked doing stand up in clubs, but, you know, when you're doing stand up 40 something weeks a year on the road, it's kind of hard to, you know, I was getting married and starting to have kids and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that can work, you know? So, you know, it was a chance to, the stuff that I liked about stand-up, which was ad-libbing, fooling around, doing characters, you know, getting crazy, talking and working with talented oddballs, you know, animation and sketch comedy had all that in spades, you know? So, so it was, you know, I kind of got pushed. I didn't get pushed, but like eventually stand-up voiceover seemed like the thing that checked the most of those boxes. And just batting average wise, economically, I realized that like auditioning for voiceover, my batting average was way, way higher than it was on camera. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I didn't really have like, I don't really have like a distinctive look, you know what I mean? And I'm not like, you know, not handsome to be a leading man, not ugly enough to be the troll neighbor character actor guy. So you know, you're sort of like betwixt and between, neither fish nor fowl. And with sketch comedy and even more so voice acting, I found like I could play these extreme characters, you know, which I really liked. And then you could also put some subtlety in the extreme, you know, like something like Ice King on Adventure Time. Like, yeah, he's kind of an extreme character, but there's also this kind of core of sadness and tragedy in him that it's fun to try and marry his, you know, balls to the wall craziness with that. And SpongeBob has that too. You know, SpongeBob's got a lot, the show has a lot of heart, and the actors who play the characters, you know, Bill Fagerbakke, Roger Bumpus, Clancy Brown, Carolyn Lawrence, Doug Lawrence, Jill Talley, they all bring heart to those characters too. It's not just funny voices and screaming, you know? And yeah, I think to answer your question, that's what I loved about sketch comedy, was kind of disappearing into a character, you know, like Lon Chaney Sr. was always one of my idols, silent movie Lon Chaney, you know, he never looked like him.
No, that's true. That's true. You know, a lot of people are saying that, that I'm looking at our chat right now. They're saying that's some of their favorite things about actors who aren't leading man, actors who aren't pigeonholed to playing
one chatting.
Thing.
I thought you were gonna edit out the boring stuff and put this up later.
Oh no, I'm leaving everything in, man.
We're going live?
None of this is boring. None of this is boring, man.
Oh my God.
All of this is great.
So what are they saying in the chats?
And the chat is loving it, man. The chat, they said, hey, look there. They say, yeah, we're live. We're here, man. And they're loving you. They're loving
is
everything that you're saying.
Bad?
What's that?
Is anybody saying anything bad? Why won't he shut up?
No. They're saying the closest thing that they're saying that might be bad is like, wow, he went off on a thing and it's great. So,
oh, yeah. Well, I'm all about, yeah,
Yeah, no, they love it.
ADHD is my friend.
Yeah. No, they love it. And you know what? I gotta ask you. Now, I don't want to bring things down here. I'm gonna bring up a picture. I don't want things to bring things down. But I have to.
Don't
I have
worry
to
about
ask.
It.
And believe me, this is not coming from a place where I'm being accusatory or anything. I'm just asking because this is an issue today. So we've had a lot of voice actors where their past work is being called to question, scrutinized, you know, certain characters that they've done. I know that you, your name got brought up in that when they were talking about the characters of Mudflap and Skids for the Transformers, where it was like two, the controversy was it was two stereotypical ghetto characters and they were being voiced by a white person. After all of that has been said, I thought you about to get up and leave. How are you? How do you feel about that situation and how do you feel about those characters today?
Well, you know, I regret it actually, because I felt like myself and Reno, the other actor who's black, you know, not to spend too much time on this, but, you know, we were there doing other characters. I was doing Wheelie. Mm. And then, you know, the director said, hey, we got these other characters. You know, this is who they are. They're kind of like Ice. They're kind of like Vanilla Ice or whatever. Like they're wannabe rappers. You know what I mean? Like they're into rap culture, but they've seen it from afar, you know, it gets beamed up to them in space and they've kind of absorbed it. So they're kind of like wannabes, you know, will you guys scratch these characters? You know what I mean? And the understanding was kind of that those voices would be replaced later and we were kind of just placeholders. You know, we were there doing other characters. And so I'm like, okay. And I remember at the time I had a little bit of twinge, you know, like this feels kind of weird, but I'm like, this isn't real, right? Like we're just laying this down for the animators or whatever. And, you know, so that was probably my bad for not vetting that closer, but also I was in that thing where you're working on a big movie with a big director and you kind of just do what you're told, you know what I mean?
That's
kind of what a character actor does anyway. And I wasn't even thinking of it in racial terms, to be honest, that much. You know, it was just kind of, we were just okay, this is what we're being like, those you know, the like you know, Beverly Hills kids, you know, going yo
yeah.
So you know, but yeah, so yeah, that was that. You know, it didn't cause that much of a kerfuffle, but probably 2020 Tom Kenny would say, nah, yeah, I'm not comfortable doing that, and maybe risk getting fired off the other guy, you know. Well, you know, yeah. So who knows what, you know, people are crazy.
No, well, I appreciate the answer. It was just something that I know everybody was thinking about. I wasn't trying to, you know, put you on the spot or anything like that.
Yeah, it never really comes up that much, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, we were there doing other characters and you know, Reno was like, was it's fine, you know, he said it's fine, don't worry about it, it's scratch, and you know, these guys are robots anyway, they're androids, you know, they're automatons, okay, you know. And so yeah, I probably said okay a little too quick, you know?
No, and then, but like I said, nothing that I think anybody's ever held against you later on. Everybody loves you.
It's never come up, but yeah, my answer is now I would have given that a second thought. Back then I was like, okay, but this is just a template that some other actor's gonna come in and replace. So
well,
I was there doing Wheelie.
I thought I had a little more time, and I don't want to end it on that note. But I'm getting the signal now. I'm told that I got to wrap up.
You take as long as you want. Oh, by the way, I don't think the signal is, you know, due to the subject, but it's just Viacom got the time frame.
Oh no, I know she's telling me it's time to wrap. I have so many. This has been a great moment right
Let's
here.
Let's do the lightning round. Let's do the lightning round.
Okay. Lightning round. I see behind you a bunch of comic books. And I know you're an animation nerd, you said. Are you a comic book nerd too?
A little bit of a comic book nerd, more of a newspaper strip nerd, 20s, 30s, and 40s mostly. But yeah, I grew up reading comic books like 60s, 70s Marvel. Like the height of my comic book reading was probably in the 70s. But you know, if you look around, I'm also a music guy, so all kind of like blues and soul music and stuff like that is my thing. And just Popeye. You see my whole Popeye shelf back there. I'm a Popeye the Sailor Man freak. That's my favorite character of all time. Got Buddy Holly. Got Buddy Holly back there. Where the heck is he? There's Buddy Holly.
Okay. And, another lightning round question. Besides SpongeBob, who I know you love, and I know you love all your characters.
But I love him.
The character that you look forward to besides SpongeBob, like you miss this character, you don't get to do too much of him or her. Which character is that?
I would have to say Ice King. I would have to say Heifer from Rocko's Modern Life. And, you know, it's fun. Like, now that I'm voice directing the SpongeBob shows, and there's a couple of spinoff series as well, like, I really look forward to that. Like, sometimes it's nice to not have to record. You're just kind of directing other actors on Zoom the way that we're talking right now. And that's turned out to be something that I unexpectedly loved. Again, something that, you know, going back to something that they asked me if I would be interested in doing a few seasons ago. And I was like, I don't know. Would that make things weird with the other actors? So that I'm kind of the boss guy instead of being a coworker. I don't know. And then it turned out great. So I miss directing when I'm not doing it. And I miss the characters when I'm not doing them, but I would have to say mostly Heifer and Ice King. Those are two I'd love to be able to get to do all the time.
Yeah. A friend of mine told me to tell you that, no disrespect to SpongeBob, but he said you do a brilliant job. My friend Christian, he said you do a brilliant job at Ice King, and he wanted me to pass that on.
Man.
So, and my friend
thanks.
Julian.
Well, there's a little bit of me in all those characters, you know. I mean, every character you do, you know, it's like people don't think of it as real acting. They think it's like, oh, I just read out loud off of this music stand or whatever, and you know, it's there's a lot more to it than that. It is not to sound cornball or like you're elevating it too much or whatever, because at the end of the day you're making funny voices, and if you're on camera acting you're just putting on clothes and prancing around pretending to be somebody or not, but it's you know, you try to figure out where your points of connection are with this character. And with SpongeBob, I was lucky enough that Hillenburg Steven knew me from Rocko and put some of me already in SpongeBob. You know what I mean? So when I auditioned for him, he said, he's you, he's hyperactive. He goes from thing to thing. He works his butt off. You know, he puts way more into it than he probably needs to. And you know, that being said, Hillenburg really put me through my paces at the beginning. He was really specific about what he wanted on that pilot. He definitely cracked the whip in his own quiet, polite, sweet way. You know, the hoops were all his, you know, and you know,
no, I hear you, man. Yeah, and God bless him, man. And you know, especially for him bringing you to us, and I really appreciate
He was the greatest, man. What a visionary. I got some of his drawings and things he gave me on other walls of this office, but he knew exactly what he wanted with SpongeBob and with the musical, you know, like they were trying to get other iterations of SpongeBob going for a while. Mm-hmm. And some of them went a little bit up the pipeline and then didn't feel right. And he, you know, the SpongeBob Broadway musical, he was really excited about and was like, wow, this actually seems like it's working, you know, like this has got heart, this feels like it should, you know. And he you know, so that brings us brings us full circle to this thing. It was fun watching him just be thrilled by this, you know, when we went to the New York premiere and he was, you know, ill. Yeah. And just watching him sit there and beam at it and watch the audience, you know, in this packed theater react to it. It was really poignant.
That is great that was one of the things that he got to see before he was gone. You know, that's very nice to hear.
He was amazing. And it's like you said, gone. It's hard to believe when somebody, you know, when somebody leaves this plane of existence, it's, you know, you sort of never get used to them not being around, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how it is for all of us. We, you know, we do these SpongeBob sessions all the time, a couple of times a week, but his presence is always there, you know? It's always felt, and he's just invoked by us and by Mark Ceccarelli and Vince Waller, the producers of the show. Just, yeah, he's such a big presence, you know? It's kind of like, you know, he's gone, but he's not.
Yeah, but what he's doing is still continuing on, man. And you're helping to carry that on.
Yeah, he planted a seed that kind of took over the world, you know? And I love being a part of something that, you know, kind of makes people smile and happy, and they make memes out of it. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be any downside to it. You know, it's not like you're, oh, I love my job, I make bombs, you know? It's like, no, I make cartoons, you know? So it's really nice to, have this product and, you know, that puts just silliness out into the world at a time where, I think a little bit of silliness really comes in handy. You kind of need some respite from the modern what life is now, and it's nice to be a purveyor of that.
Wow, you got the chat crying. They're like, wow, this is so sweet to know. I mean, you actually moved people right now. People are like, wow.
Oh, I'm so lucky to have that job. You know what I mean? Of just and it's funny. One thing I'm learning with this SpongeBob Broadway musical is that a lot of people, like, maybe people without kids, or, you know, maybe they're Broadway fans, but they're not cartoon fans or whatever. Like, they kind of know what SpongeBob is, but they never really have. Mm. And so the Broadway show is kind of their on-ramp to SpongeBob. Like, wow. And then they go, hey, maybe I'll try watching the cartoon. You know? Hey, this is pretty funny. So it's kind of funny. Like, one thing we try to keep in mind when we're making the shows, recording the shows, and I'm directing the voice directing the shows, is that this episode that we're making right now, even though we're 20 some odd years in, this episode we're recording today is going to be the first episode that somebody sees. So just remember that. So, you know, give it that 90, you know, that's why we always try to give it that 1999 energy. You know what I mean? You don't want to sound like you're phoning it in, you know, because we're not phoning it in. We love these characters, you know, and you kind of become them when you go into the booth and they turn on the microphones. You kind of are SpongeBob, and Clancy is Mr. Krabs, and Bill is Patrick, and Carolyn Lawrence is Sandy, and Mr. Lawrence is Plankton. And you sort of, you know, everybody's just in there. It's not like you need to make an effort to be energetic, because SpongeBob's world is like just a different dimension from ours. Like, the colors are brighter, the music is crazier, everything's faster and louder and freakier, you know, like a lot of times when I'm directing on camera actors, like, they'll do a stunt casting thing and they'll be doing something that they think is a little too big or over the top. And I go, you're not even close. You know what I mean? It's like this is like a whole nother dimension. So, you know, sometimes with on camera actors, I really got to dig the spurs into them when I'm directing, especially when people are in their closets, you know, at home. Like, you're like, oh my God, here's this celebrity and he's in his closet and he feels like he's screaming and he's like, I'm being too loud, you know, I'm being too big. I'm like, you still need to come up to here, you know. It's it's fun living in cartoon world for a bunch of hours every week.
Man, I can't tell you how much joy it is to talk to somebody who just lights up when they talk about what they do and love it so much.
Oh, I love it, man. And thanks for bringing up my weirdo IMDb. I got one of the weirdest IMDbs known to man. I gotta say, it's kind of all over the place.
It's very long. I will tell you that I had brought up is very long. You're one of those hard interviews that to do, because
we can do part two. Let's set up part two right now.
I would love to talk to you again if they allow me to. I know the publicist, she's mad at me right now because we kept going.
She doesn't she know that this is a runaway train that cannot be stopped? So let's stick a pin in this.
Okay.
Ow. Sorry. We'll stick a pin in this and then we'll do part two another time.
You know what? When CBS Access brings out SpongeBob, Sponge on the Run.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was a weird thing because it was supposed to be obviously a theatrical movie.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic happened and the date kept getting pushed and pushed. And then the decision was made to just stream it in early 2021 on CBS All Access. So yeah, there's a new SpongeBob movie coming. There's so much going on, I actually forget that. Oh, yeah, there's a movie coming out, you know?
Well, I've talked to some voice actors twice and rescheduled with them. I can do the same with you. I will
Go. Who'd you talk to twice? Rob Paulson.
Yes. So there you go. You actually seen some stuff. That makes me feel good, man. Well, you know what? I will definitely try to reschedule with you, but this has been great. Even if it didn't happen, this has been a wonderful thing for me.
Great.
Thank you so much for your time. Well, you not only made me happy.
I love your show too, and you've interviewed so many people. I know Marilyn Ricegub, Jerry Minor, you know, Rob Paulson, like just so many people. I go, oh, I know. It's, I always say, like, I've been doing this so long, and I've been in so, like, my IMDb is so weird and all over the place that I kick Kevin Bacon's butt when it comes to degrees of separation. It's like, come on, Kevin, come on, Bacon, let's throw down, you know. So, that's something we can talk about next time.
Yes we will. People, I gotta go before I get in trouble. He's not gonna get in trouble. I will.
I was born in trouble.
Well, we're both in trouble. Before our mama whoops us, we gotta get out of here. Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it. This has been an honor. The people are happy. This has been great. Thank you, and good luck with everything. I hope to talk to you again very soon.
Thank you. Thanks to you, and thanks to your fans.
Thank you. Bye bye. Oh, folks.
That was great.
Oh, but so there she is.
Sorry.
No, she's gone. You're not mad at me, are you?
The stupid part is, there's a damn clock right at the top of my computer screen, and I didn't even look at the freaking thing one time. It's like, hey, stupid, you know? So sorry.
No.
Not at all.
No, thank you, guys. Thank you, Nick. I apologize. Thank you for the extra time. Thank you.
Somebody just ran through frame behind you, Nikki.
Oh, that was Dylan. He was there at our...
I remember him.
You do? He's trying to wrap Christmas presents, and he's very frustrated that the wrapping paper isn't cooperating.
Oh, man.
I should probably let them go.
Anyway, well, Tom,
see you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Corey. Wait, Corey, what's that poster behind you? Is that Texas Chainsaw? No, what is it?
Oh, no. That is... Everybody asked me about that poster. It's a blaxploitation movie called... you can't see it from my end, but it's a blaxploitation movie called Black Samson.
Black Samson, I don't know that one.
Check it out.
Yeah, I know all those. I know Truck Turner, and I know I used to go see those movies in the 70s. You know, go down to the Black Theater in Syracuse, and go see those, man. All those Five on the Black Hand Side,
see,
Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song.
That's why we got to do a part two, because now you got to tell me about this movie when you see it, and you have to see it.
Okay, I know all those movies. Yeah. TCM's been pretty good about showing like the blaxploitation, you know, like Coffee and you know, all those movies with Pam Grier.
No, that's excellent, man. I'd love to hear what you think about it.
Wow, Pam Grier's my dream date.
Oh, she's been mine for years, man.
So, yeah, exactly.
All right.
Well, thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for being so easy to talk to. I hope that Transformers thing wasn't too awkward, but.
I hope it wasn't awkward. I had to ask because people say you got to ask, but you know, no. Thank you for even answering that, man. That was a great answer you gave.
Do you think that came off okay? I mean, it's the honest answer. Like, he was like, hey, well, you're here. Can you scratch these two rapping? And, and it was me and Reno.
Let me just say that people.
Really great actor who played young Louis Armstrong in a TV movie.
Oh,
really,
yeah.
Great.
No, let me just say that people in our chat, they kept saying, perfect answer and great answer. I'm not even lying to you. It was a great answer.
Oh, good. Okay. Hey, you know, all you can do is the truth. Nowadays, I would say Michael Bay. I just don't feel comfortable with that. And he's such a maniac. You never know what he's... Because I've seen him make people cry. Wait a minute.
I've worked on Michael Bay movies. I've seen it.
Yeah. I mean, him and I always got along. And this is something we could talk about for part two as well. But he always liked me. Like, he would be raging and making people cry. And then I'd walk in, I'd be running late, and people go, he's going to kill you, you know. You're supposed to be here 7 minutes ago, you know. And then I walk in, and he go, Tom Kenny, hey! And they go, what weird snake charmer magical powers do you have? Do you have pictures of Michael Bay that you know? And I was just like, I don't know why he loves me. But he would like... And I don't know him. I don't know him at all. Like, you know, we weren't friends. Like, I still don't know him. But he would confide in me. He'd go, Tom, come over here for a minute. And I go over and he'd go, the studio doesn't know what I'm up against. You know, I've got special effects being done in four different countries. I've got, you know what? And I was just, I just met him that day, And I'm like, yeah, I hear you, man. I was like his shrink or his bartender or something. Like, it was crazy.
So, you're a likable guy, man. You're a very likable guy. Why wouldn't he want to talk to you?
Well, you know, people have always confided in me, whether it's like, you know, some crazy wino on the bus or like whatever. My whole life, I've always been that guy where people give way too much information to on first meeting. Like, wow, I really didn't need to know that about a person I just met 5 seconds ago. But yeah, that's one thing Bobcat has said has been consistent my whole life, where people just walk up to me and they just kind of unload. I probably should have been a shrink or something, but not smart enough. So barely smart enough to be an actor. But this is all stuff for part two, man.
Oh, looking forward to it.
I just thought of something, Nikki.
Yeah,
we can do part two when the movie starts streaming.
Yes, yes.
Is that too soon?
A little bit, yeah. It's a little bit too soon, but when we start working on it, I can put another request through and we'll do it. We'll probably do another press day too if you're up for it.
Okay. What do you think? Right. Too soon? Corey?
No, never too soon, man. No, please. What are you talking about? Anytime. I'm honored that you've asked.
There'll be some SpongeBob thing that we'll need to pimp down the road.
Well, there's the 100 episodes, then there's the next 100 episodes. So I can talk with the Viacom team to see when we can work on timing and we can work it out. So I'll talk to Zach.
Thanks, Nikki. Sorry to keep you so long. You probably should be wrapping presents.
It's okay.
The fact that your presents are actually have been purchased put you way ahead of me.
You're not done?
I'm done with the big ones.
Okay. Yeah, I have little ones too.
But I got some little things I got to run around. I'm trying to keep my little independent neighborhood stores going. Aww. You know, so I'm trying to go chain store free this Christmas. You know,
my daughter works at the
trying
Target.
To go Amazon free.
Oh, I hear
Jeff
you.
Bezos don't need my money.
My daughter works at the Target Empire Center, so I go there quite a bit.
She does.
He does. Remember
that one's
kids?
Crazy. That's like lying around the block.
It's insane. So, but she works there, so I get a little perk.
I hope she's staying safe.
Yeah, two masks, but it's okay.
Good. I know that's got to be worrisome for you as a parent. You know.
Yeah, it's all good. So we will touch base as we get closer to Sponge on the Run, and then Corey, I will talk to Kevin, and Tom, I will talk to Zach.
All right, guys.
Corey, that was a great interview. Let's do it again real soon.
I'm honored. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks
for your
cousin.
Time.
All right.
And I'm going to go watch Black Samson.
Yes. Yes. Loving to hear about it. Looking forward to hearing about it. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Woo. Man. Somebody said, Corey's stressing. Yes. Yes, I was, because I was supposed to be done with that about 30 minutes ago. But I'm always, you know what, I this is why I love doing these things. This is why I think I'm good at this, because this happens to me all the time. I'm supposed to be finished with an interview. I got a publicist breathing down my neck telling me to go, and the person's having a good time and they don't want to go. And what more can you say? That is the ultimate honor right there. So, thank you, chat, for sticking around. I hope I wasn't recording something that wasn't supposed to be. I think they knew I was recording live. I mean, not that they said anything they shouldn't have. They were great. They both of them, Nikki and Tom. But Tom is a wonderful guy, man. It's always a joy to talk to people who they're out there bringing millions joy. Millions of people joy, and then they act like they're the most down-to-earth people, man, and they're very humble and very appreciative, and you can't, you know, you look at that and you can't ask for more. People, thank you. I'm glad that you had a great time, and everybody's saying that he was great. I really appreciate you guys tuning in. A lot of fun today. The time limit was supposed to be 30 minutes. I think we went, let's see here. So we went about 50 minutes. So we almost went an hour. So, yeah, I went 20 minutes over. He went 20 minutes over. I ain't going to get in trouble over him. I got way more than I thought I would out of that. Tom Kenny, man. Voice of SpongeBob, SpongeBob, voice of many characters out there. But also extended, very long live-action career before he got into the voice work. I knew him from that live-action stuff, so that was something great for me to be able to talk to him. I used to love all his live-action stuff. So, people, again, thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm glad that you guys had a good time. Austin, this was amazing. Yeah, I really, really do hope he comes in for part two. Yeah, I've had a great time talking to people for part two of an interview. I always thought like maybe part two would be not as fun, but yeah, it is. So we'll get him back on. All right, guys. Talking about keeping things going too long, I should be getting out of here. Y'all don't want to hear from me. You already heard from Tom. He's gone, so let me leave. Hey, folks, you know what I'm going to say to you if you've been here before. I stream all the time, but even when I'm not, that does not mean that I don't want to talk to you. So you can always get a hold of me, streaming or not. Pull up a keyboard, type in kcoolmans@gmail.com. That's kcoolmans@gmail.com. You email us with any kind of questions, comments, compliments, insults, input, and our advice. Hit us up on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Copy that information right there. Memorize it, love it, and use it. And also, people, if you plan on coming to Austin, wait. We got a vaccine coming right around the corner. Just hold off. You'll be all right. But when the time does come, we welcome you back. But until then, email me and just let me know your plans for Austin. kcoolmans@gmail.com. Let me know if you are moving here to Austin, to our lovely city, hopefully corona-free at the time, or you're just simply passing through. Hope to hang out with you. All right, everybody, that is it. Good night, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you are listening to or watching this, goodbye and stay toasty.
You know when you order a new video game, or a golf club, or a blender, and then it arrives at your door, you get a little thrill. Imagine how much more thrilling it is when you order a new car. With Nissan at Home, you can shop for the perfect ride and order it without ever having to go anywhere. Sure beats a golf club or a blender. Buy a new car entirely online with Nissan at Home. Deliver direct from dealer to driveway. Thrill starts here. Services may vary at participating dealers, subject to applicable law. See dealer for details.